You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Chwaba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who still likes to build a fort, Pete Chwaba.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Act 2 of Nightlight, this Monday edition, as Nightlight comes to you live from downtown Madison. We are just above State Street at Civic Media headquarters. It is so great to be here. Another shout-out to Aaron Zommers for helping us get set up. Conrad Krieger back in Green Bay, holding down the fort, working the board. Conrad, everything okay?
Yeah, it's going great.
All right. We've got Jim Healy coming up at 7:20. He is one of the programmers at UW Cinematheque and also one of the big shots at the Wisconsin Film Festival. We're going to talk about both of those things and Robert Redford, maybe some Peter Bogdanovich, all kinds of fun stuff with my film buff fan pal, Jim Healy, who will be here shortly. Right now, we've got a few more minutes with our friend Eric Jellin, the frontman for The Mascot Theory, who is here in the studio with me. We just heard a couple songs off their new album, Cosmic Hit and Run. I will get back to Eric in just a moment. But right now, ladies and gentlemen, this is exciting. Civic Media has a new Text to Win contest. It is our multi-state Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest. Conrad, back me up here.
Yeah.
Our daily prize in this contest, folks, is $200 in cash and gold jewelry. So there's one winner every day. You have to have the app to play, but I assume most of you have the Civic Media app. If you don't, download it, get the app, and text in the keyword on the app. That is the way you qualify for our multi-state Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest. And here is the grand prize. So you win $200 or gold and gold jewelry. That's an and, Conrad, not an or. $200 and
Correct.
Gold jewelry. That's the daily prize just for texting in the keyword. And then our grand prize, two club-level indoor seats to Green Bay versus Minnesota. I'm talking football here, folks. It's a Green Bay home game, November 23rd of this year at 12 p.m. That's a Sunday. We can say Sunday, right, Conrad?
Yes.
Okay. And you get a gas card to get you to the game. So that doesn't do a guy like Conrad much good because he lives there and he doesn't qualify anyway because he works for us. But it's like a $1,550 value. And you can, winners are selected. There's one per day and then one final grand prize winner. And I am going to give you the keyword, folks, right after our first break. When we're done talking to our pal Eric Jellin here, you will have tonight's keyword. Text it in right away. Get yourself eligible because you could come out way ahead on this. It's great stuff. Our Civic Media Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest, a multi-state Text to Win contest, by the way. So that is all good stuff, and we'll do the keyword shortly. Our question of the night is, it's National Diary Day. I realize most people don't really keep diaries anymore, but our National Diary Day question of the night is, what is the most embarrassing thing someone could read in your diary? We'll read some texts coming up off the text line. Dave on the stream says, the coolest thing I have in a diary is text messages. It documents in real time when you may not remember. Okay, that's good. Is that embarrassing though, Eric? This doesn't sound like it.
Depends on what it is, I guess, or who sent it.
That is the best thing about texting is I can look back, like my pal Jim is on the show tonight. And I'm like, when is the last time I had him on? I just look at the text thread.
True.
So it is a nice way to chronicle certain things. All right, Eric Jellin is here. We've got a few more minutes with our pal Eric Jellin, the front man for the Mascot Theory. So you got Mineral Point this month on the 24th. Talk about that show. What a great little town, and it sounds like a fantastic venue.
Yeah, 2 days. We'll be in Mineral Point on the it's on the Orchard Lawn, which is a cool old, used to be the Gundry House, or maybe they still call it that, I'm not sure, but it's an old house, and they have, throughout the summer, they've got all these concerts on the porch, they call them, and so we're, okay. I think we're the last one now, and I think we're going to get lucky. It's like 70s or something maybe tomorrow, hopefully, by the time we play.
It's supposed to be nice, like, for the next you should be fine.
I love it.
Yeah.
Because you never know. It was freezing cold a few weeks ago, so I'll take it. But yeah, it's my hometown, so we're really excited to be there. We're going to do an acoustic show. So we'll have the full band, but it'll be acoustic.
Oh, fun.
So it's going to be a blast.
So, all right, Cosmic Hit and Run, your new album drops October 3rd.
Yep.
Correct? Okay. Your last film, your last album, Every Sign of Life, was produced by kind of a legend, Terry Manning, who produced Zeppelin stuff, and he passed away. But you guys totally self-produced this album without nullifying or cheapening the contributions of a famous producer. What's more fun for you?
I mean, they were both a blast. Going down to Texas and working with Terry was like a just Cadillac experience. We're just like, this is going to be so amazing. We put a lot of time and effort into rehearsals to make sure that we were as polished as possible when we got to work with Terry, somebody of his pedigree. And we had a blast down there. We were extremely excited about what we came out with the Every Sign of Life album. But also part of us then for the next one now. And that was, you know, we had been down there. That was 3 years, 4 years ago. So it's been a while. And so now we were looking for this next one. We're like, let's do just something the complete opposite. Let's do our own thing. We'll get our pal Michael Mood, who came out to our studio to help us work on it in our home studio. And we just thought, let's try it. We've got tons of gear. We know what we were looking for. We know we're going to be rehearsed. We had the songs, we had the chops, but we want to do more with it too. Cause as you listen to the album, every song is tied together. There's found sounds that we just literally went out and picked up on our phones, and just all kinds of things in this album that we never would have been able to do in a full big studio without paying tons and tons of money of time. So being able to work on it on our own was kind of the only way to make this album.
So you've got two completed albums now. Is there one you favor, or do you notice the difference you're not going to make your album worse working with Terry Manning, but I mean, what is the difference? Is there a difference in the finished
product?
To me,
there's not. Okay. I mean, that's the thing we wanted to make sure is if we did this on our own, it's got to sound as good as our last ones. And we've done 6-7 albums. We've got a lot of albums out. So we're like, it has to just kind of keep in that same vein of the quality that we're used to. And with this one, once we got the recording done, once we got it to our pal Michael to do the mixing, and then we actually had it mastered by a really amazing Mystery Room mastering, we just knew it was something that was equal to the other in terms of quality. And it just means a ton.
You talk about Pink Floyd. Your album covers, I realize. Is there some Floyd influence there too? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I love Pink Floyd albums. I think that was Hypnosis. Storm Thurman, I believe his name was, the guy who designed a lot of their album covers. Okay. I love them. I mean, I loved it.
And do you design yours? Because you have the graphic art. Okay.
Yep. I do all the design stuff for it.
Eric Jelen is here. He is my guest from the Mascot Theory. They were just on Max Inc. Radio the other night here on WMDX. Go check out that interview too if you want to check out the podcast at civicmedia.us. They play Mineral Point the 24th. Two shows there. They're coming up to Green Bay and Appleton soon. You can check all of this out. Do you want to give your website?
TheMascotTheory.com.
All the dates are on there. They got Madison at the Atwood Music Hall here October 5th and October 3rd. The actual date the album drops at the Gibson Music Hall in Appleton. Do you have a favorite venue in the state or a couple of them?
Well, I mean, Mineral Point Opera House is always one of my hometown, so that's always a favorite.
That's fun.
And we did that one last year, and I'm sure we'll be back in a year or two. But really, you know, Gibson Music is such an amazing space up there, and it's the folks that curated the Milo Music Festival, and that's just such an amazing thing for the state. And you know, it's original music; it's all original music, and that's what we do. So, it's any kind of experience that. Or any kind of folks that really put that out there that, hey, this is original stuff and you're going to like it. And people, they've just kind of curated it that way with that festival. And so you feel like you're going into a hometown crowd when you're not even from there, because they're already just pumped to be hearing some stuff they haven't heard before.
All right, we're going to try to get one more song in here. Tell us about this final song.
This is called Final Hour, and this is kind of the main linchpin for the entire album. The first one that I wrote, it was a night when my dad was going into surgery and was not expected to come out, and so I was kind of dealing with that with writing some lyrics down, and ironically he actually did come out of it, and it was another year before he finally passed away. But it was a lot of those kind of moments, and so this was kind of that one.
All right, first one. Con, let's hear it.
Thank you. So you're taking an unplanned midnight stroll, wandering blind through the unknown, searching for answers only ghosts could ever know. You travel an unpaved gravel road. What you will find there, God only knows. A thief in the darkness, or a light to guide you home. Is this the final hour? Is this the last goodbye? Can I get some sleep tonight while these memories collide? Is this the final hour? Is this the last goodbye? Can you make it back to me when shadows fill your eyes? Tired from the daily grind, and you didn't plan to be cast aside. Surrounded by strangers while the symptoms multiplied. I try to decode inconceivable plots, unwinnable games, unreachable docks. The meaning of life in the bottom of an empty cereal box. Final hour. Is this the last goodbye? Can I get some sleep tonight while these memories collide? Is this the final hour? Is this the last goodbye? Can you make it back to me when shadows fill your eyes?
That was Final Hour from The Mascot Theory. Eric Jelen is here in studio with me. He is their vocalist and lyricist, and this has been so much fun, buddy. I love when you come on the show.
Oh, awesome. Thanks for having me.
I wish you luck with the new album and all the shows you have coming up to promote it.
Thank you.
I love the material, and thank you again for the album. Here you go, folks, right here. Pink Floyd influenced, and you can kind of tell. He does all this stuff. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
It.
Appreciate you.
When I come back, Jim Healy will be here, and I'm going to give you the key word to the our multi-state Civic Media Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest. That is coming up after the break. Get your apps ready. You'll have the keyword, and you can be part of the contest. We're coming right back. Check out The Mascot Theory. Google them, folks. Great stuff.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
My sweet love. Ooh, my love. My sweet love.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Pete Schwabe. This is Nightlight, coming to you live from downtown Madison tonight. Always fun to be doing a show in Madison. Conrad, are you envious?
I am. You know, I could be on the other side of the glass right now, but You know, there's just nothing on the other side.
Aaron kept the chair warm for you, buddy, if you ever want to make the trip. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is time to give you all the keyword of our Civic Media Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest. Check this out. The daily prize, $200 cash and gold jewelry. There's one winner every day. And the grand prize, two club-level indoor seats to Green Bay versus Minnesota. That's football we're talking about. It is a Green Bay home game November 23rd at noon, and you get a gas card to get you to the game. It's like a $1,550 value. You can't beat that. And you get to see some football, and it's the green and gold versus the, what do you say, purple and gold, right, Conrad?
Purple People Eaters.
The Purple People Eaters. There you go. So this hour's keyword, ladies and gentlemen, is night. N-I-G-H-T, not night like nightlight. The actual word night, N-I-G-H-T. So text that in right now on the app, and you are eligible for our daily prize of $200 cash and gold jewelry, and you are automatically entered into the grand prize contest as well. So good luck, everybody. It is my pleasure to welcome a friend of mine back to the show. He's been on the show before. I love talking movies with him. He's a movie buff who does amazing work at the Wisconsin Film Festival, as well as UW Cinematheque. And he is, first of all, I want to talk about Cinematheque. This is a great thing. We'll start with that because it is this fantastic program. But joining me here in the studio right now is my pal, Jim Healy. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Pete.
Great to have you back.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
These are new microphones, so do whatever you need to do there. Are you comfortable?
You hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. Conrad, can we hear Jim okay?
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Jim Healy, ladies and gentlemen, I'm excited to have you here, Jim. I always love having in-studio guests, but especially when they know so much more about movies than I could ever imagine knowing. So let's jump right in. How are things at Cinematheque?
Better than ever. We're really enjoying great crowds for the movies. There's been a lot of kind of event feel to our screenings lately. Yeah. Like, oh, this is the one chance to see this, and let's all go. And we've had packed houses. We showed Apocalypse Now in the original release version a couple weeks ago, and we gave out the original souvenir booklets that you got when you saw it in 1979.
Yeah.
And
how cool.
It was, you know, it was packed, and there was a lot of students there and young people seeing the movie for the first time.
I wanted to go the last time I was in town. You guys were screening a David Lynch film, and Mary Sweeney, his partner and editor and producer, producing partner, was going to be there for a Q&A, and I don't get out of here till 8, and I texted Ben, and he's like, I knew it was going to be full, but I thought, are there any no-shows? He goes, text Jim, and I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. I knew you had your hands full that night. But
those screenings were really crazy. I mean, we showed Mulholland Drive, which Mary produced and edited. She spoke afterwards, but we had a full crowd for a full house that showed up almost an hour and a half before the movie and just made a coil line outside, and they were all there. You know, they wanted to be there for that one.
That's incredible.
Great.
And mostly, I would have just wanted to be there for the Q&A because I've seen Mulholland Drive. I think I don't know if I talked to you about this, but I did rewatch it about probably 8 or 9 months ago. I still have no idea what's going on at the end of the movie, and I would have loved to have asked her. I'm sure she gets that all the time. But do you know? I mean, have you heard her talk about the end of that film?
Well, she won't talk about it, as nor would David Lynch ever talk about, you know, what it means, or, you know, they'll talk directly about what you're actually seeing. Like, yes, those are the same older people from the beginning of the film
people
who are crawling out from under the door at this point, you know, but that's it. You know, it's just, you know, they'll talk about what
so
you're seeing.
Great. Well, it's a great program. And for people who haven't been to Cinematheque, I talked a little bit about this at the top of the show. It's free to the public. I mean, I would imagine with the amount of film buffs you have in Madison, they can fill up pretty quickly, and maybe you have to turn people away sometimes.
But
it is definitely worth checking out. It's this great theater. I mean, it's a little outdated, but the screen is state of the art. All the equipment you guys have is state of the art.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful place to watch
great
a movie.
Great sound system.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we frequently show original 35mm prints that look great. That's how we showed Mulholland Drive last summer.
You had a Paper Moon screening recently, and you're showing another film of Peter Bogdanovich's called Targets on October 4th. I've seen some of Peter, but let's talk about Targets.
Okay.
What's coming up. Let's start with that. I have not seen that film.
So Targets is Bogdanovich's first feature film. You know, he'd done some work editing, and I think Roger Corman gave him an old like Soviet sci-fi film that he dubbed and edited himself.
Oh, really?
So he had projects that he worked, and he worked on The Wild Angels and a number of other films. But Roger Corman gave him the opportunity to direct Targets, his first feature, with in the idea that he could use Boris Karloff for a few days.
Yeah, that was crazy.
One of his last movies. And he had to come up with a script himself. And it's a really kind of brilliant movie that cross cuts between the story of an aging horror movie star, Boris Karloff,
yeah,
playing Byron Orlok. So the comparison is there. And a terrifying secondary story about a sniper who is driving around Los Angeles and bringing himself to hidden locations and shooting people. And it's a frightening Prussian film that, you know, only unfortunately has gotten more real as the
right.
decades have gone by. But the two stories collide at the end at a drive-in. It's a really, really incredible, scary, intense sequence at the end of the film. It's a great film.
Jim Healy is here. When we come back, folks, after the news, I'm going to ask Jim, and I need this for myself as well, where you start with Peter Bogdanovich. If people haven't seen a lot of his films, we'll get that from Jim. I'll read some of your texts. And it's just a fun night here at Nightlight, and it's great to have you with me. We are coming right back. It's Pete Schwabba and Nightlight live from Madison on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Nightlight, ladies and gentlemen. So, Khan, this question apparently was not as much of a dud as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I'm going to get through all these texts because I want to talk movies. But if I don't, folks, we will read them tomorrow as we always do. There's just too many. What am I supposed to do, Khan?
You know, I think we get a diary ourselves and write all the diary entries in that diary.
It's a terrible suggestion. Monica from Mount Horeb, she's in the 608, says, having feelings for people who treated me like crap. Yeah, you don't want people to read that. Chris from the 773 says, I had a diary for about a month and a half when I was 12, and unfortunately, there was nothing embarrassing in it. But if I was writing one to date, I would hope no one read that you asked this question tonight in my diary. Ha ha. Yeah, that's fine. Okay. I can, you know, just ban Chris from future shows, Conrad. Tyler from the 608 says, same old, the monotony of it all. The highlights, I got a dog. He is funny, gets the most ink. Okay, Tyler, that's good. All right, we'll do our best to get to these texts, folks. Thank you for playing along on a question I did not expect to get this amount of mileage from, but we've got Jim Healy here from UW Cinematech and the Wisconsin Film Festival. So, Jim, I wanted to ask you, Peter Bogdanovich, mm-hmm. he's just one of those names that, you know, probably in the past 20 years ago, I would nod my head like I knew who I knew who he was, but I don't know his work. And I think a lot of people, he's made some great films, but he's not, you don't hear his name like you do Scorsese or Coppola or whatever.
Right.
He's kind of more of an offbeat name. Where should people start with his films if they wanted to check out more of his work?
Well, if you want to come to the Cinematheque, you can
start
at the beginning with his very first feature, Targets.
I served you a softball there, didn't I?
Yeah. But, you know, what's interesting about him is he comes out of that same kind of school of filmmakers as Scorsese you know, the movie brats of the late 60s, early 70s. He was a New York guy. He moved out to L.A. You know, he wrote articles for Esquire. He interviewed people. He really got to know the movie business by just talking to and meeting filmmakers and watching a lot of movies. And then he, you know, right off the bat was a very talented filmmaker. And his first three or four movies, well, Targets wasn't exactly a box office sensation. It was a little movie. Paramount released it, but it showed that he could handle himself. And his next movie was The Last Picture Show. That came out 2 years
so
later, 1971. And, you know, he got nominated for the Oscar, and the movie won a bunch of Oscars for the actors, and was, you know, a huge box office hit. And a black and white movie after black and white movies had gone out of fashion in Hollywood, and that it made money and had, you know, legs was really something to Hollywood. So he basically got, you know, the blank check to do whatever he wanted after that, and he did.
And the Last Picture Show, for listeners, it's Jeff Bridges, Timothy Bottoms,
films, yeah.
And Sybil Shepherd.
Yeah.
Great cast, and you can see them all when they're young, too. Really good.
Randy Quaid's first movie, too.
Oh, yeah.
His next film was an even bigger smash. It was a comedy with Barbra Streisand and Ryan O'Neal called What's Up, Doc?
Love that movie.
Huge hit. And then he made Paper Moon, another comedy with Ryan O'Neal and Tatum O'Neal. Big smash at the box office. We showed that film a couple weeks ago at the Cinematheque. But then he made a bunch of kind of high-profile flops. You know, the general idea about him is that he got a big head and thought he could do anything. And he made a bunch of movies, two with Sybil Shepherd, one film called Nickelodeon, which is about the silent movie days. And they were very expensive and not liked by the critics, and nobody went to see them. And so suddenly he was in movie director jail.
Directing TV.
No, he eventually did, but he stayed in movies for a while. In fact, I think the first film he made after those three flops was an art house movie called Saint Jack with Ben Gazzara, based on a Paul Theroux novel. And it is a great movie. It might be my favorite Bogdanovich film.
Oh, really?
It's really great. It's about a procurer of women in Singapore during the Vietnam War. And it's just a great character study and a really, really terrific movie. And then he made a bunch of other films. He sunk some of his own money into them. He had a hit movie with Mask.
Yeah.
The 1985 film with Cher, but he fought with the studio upon its release because he wanted Bruce Springsteen songs on the soundtrack. They finally, if you see the movie now, you can see his director's cut with the songs and a couple of scenes that he wanted in the film. But the studio wanted to take that stuff out because it was cheaper. They replaced it with Bob Seger's
songs. Which is no slouch himself. In fact, his music, I remember, worked really well in that.
I don't remember having that much of a problem with it. I've only seen that version once. I've seen the director's cut, but the kid, the real Rocky Dennis that Eric Stoltz plays, and who Eric Stoltz plays in the movie, he listened to Bruce Springsteen. So that was a big bone of contention with Bogdanovich. He threatened to he tried to have the movie, the release, halted, and Universal Pictures didn't like that. And so even though the movie was a hit and it's a very well directed film, very well regarded film, he was right back in movie jail again.
Wow.
And he kept directing. He would do theatrical films, jobs for hire. He did a lot of TV movies. Later on, he's best known as Dr. Melfi's shrink on the Sopranos. He also started acting quite a bit too. Elliot.
Lorraine Bracco.
Yeah, Lorraine Bracco.
See him and talk about Tony Soprano to him.
Elliot Kupferberg. For Sopranos. That's Peter Bogdanovich.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Well, I would start with, I mean, for me, just based on what I've seen, I forgot he did What's Up, Doc. It was a funny 70s
really funny
screwball
movie.
Comedy. The guy with the golf clubs who keeps throwing them out because it's too hard to take.
Oh, it's great.
It's a really fun movie, but that is great stuff. Our keyword, folks, tonight for our Civic Media Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest, you have to enter it on the app, is Night, N-I-G-H-T, N-I-G-H-T, Night. So get that in, and you are eligible to win $200 and gold jewelry, and it also automatically makes you eligible for the grand prize. Jim Healy is here from UW Cinematheque and the Wisconsin Film Festival. I've had him on the show before. Love talking movies with Jim. So Robert Redford passed away probably a week ago today or maybe tomorrow.
Yeah.
What is his legacy? I mean, he's a Hollywood, he's a titan, a giant, all those things you want to say. Where do you rank him as an actor? Because I thought he was a really good actor. I don't think I'd put him in the top of all time in terms of just acting. Like, he was fine. He was good.
Well, he was my first idea of a movie star. I think before I ever even saw one of his films, it must have been, I saw The Sting on TV, like in the late 70s. But even before that, I knew him as this. He was the biggest movie star. When you your image of a movie star.
No question, he was a huge movie star. Yeah.
I mean, you know, and so when I started seeing his movies, you know, I understood it because he's a very good actor. He's very relaxed. I mean, that's really kind of the key thing. You know, in terms of range, like, you didn't exactly see him playing the kind of, he rarely did the occasional villain or the heel. Right. And then the times he did, it kind of backfired on him a little bit. But you know, he was just somebody you really like to see. And he didn't do a lot of comedy. I think he had a kind of serious, but when he did do things in the comedic range, I think he was at his best. I mean, even like The Sting and Butch Cassidy are definitely, you know, pitched at that kind of level. And then there's the one film I'm always stumping for, which is, I probably hold in the Redford pantheon, is The Hot Rock. One of the best films of the 70s, with a script by William Goldman.
Oh, wow.
Adapting a novel by Donald Westlake. And Goldman wrote Butch Cassidy and Great Waldo Pepper and a bunch of Redford films. He wrote All the President's Men. He wrote the script for that. Anyway, it's a really, really funny heist comedy about some inept jewel thieves who are trying to steal the same diamond over and over again. It keeps getting taken away from them and put into some other precarious situation. But it's got George Segal and Ron Liebman and Zero Mostel is in it. And it's just a great New York comedy. But, you know, like last time I looked, it wasn't on streaming anywhere. Like, you couldn't rent it on Amazon.
Really?
You can find a Blu-ray out there that, you know, maybe a used copy for $100 or something. But Redford is really funny in it. And his timing is great. He has great double takes in it. And you know, just so relaxed and so much fun to watch. And, you know, and then the other movies I'd put in the pantheon would be, you know, All the President's Men and Three Days of the Condor. I mean, those are just
love them.
Great. But there's another like half dozen movies, you know, that great period between, you know, say like 69 and 79. There's, you know, probably like a 12, 13 movies, and, you know, there's another six that are just The Sting and The Way We Were, and Electric Horseman is a lot of fun. And
Electric Horseman's great, yeah.
You know, the other thing, there were these two huge periods where he was at his prime where he didn't work at all. Like, there's like almost 4 years between All the President's Men and Electric Horseman, and the only movie he did in between was a kind of an extended cameo in A Bridge Too Far. And then he did Brubaker in 1980 and didn't do another movie for another 4 years. He didn't until The Natural. As an actor, he started directing films at that time, but he didn't even, I think Ordinary People came out in 1980 and The Natural came out like almost 4 years later. It was, you know, these huge gaps.
Yeah.
You know, he was doing a lot of, I don't want to say charity work, but he was doing,
environmental work, activism
And establishing the Sundance Institute, and, you know, which is his other great legacy. You know,
right.
You asked about his legacy, is the, you know, the creation of this not-for-profit film festival, that it's about championing, you know, artists working outside of the studio system, you know, which he didn't do very often, but that he, you know, built this festival where all kinds of filmmakers could show their work, from, you know, experimental avant-garde shorts to, you know, 6 hour long documentaries to, you know, independent features that focus on an area of, you know, a subject that has, you know, been widely underrepresented in film.
Yeah. Was that the first, like, I was talking about this last week. I feel like there are probably easily 15 film festivals just in Wisconsin. Do the fact that, like, there are so many film festivals, is that due in part to Sundance and the popularity it gained?
I think so. I think it also has to do with kind of where the industry went, right? There was, you know, there's much more of a focus now on, you know, on the industry that is in charge of making big budget movies for wide release. There's less movies being made. The budgets are going up. There's less choices to see. And I think, film festivals are kind of filling the gap of, you know, and showing the independently made stuff that the studios aren't interested in,
right?
Because, you know, it doesn't make $100 million on the opening weekend.
It's funny. You talked about The Sting. That's probably my favorite Robert Redford movie. It's probably in my top five of all time. Mm. One of those films that everything works, the script, the sets. I love that. I typically always prefer a film that was on location, but the fact I love the backlot stuff that they shot with The Sting. It's just a great world, and he was nominated. That's his only
nomination Oscar for acting.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I'm not that didn't help form my opinion. I do really like Robert Redford as an actor, but that did surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, I think even his performance in The Way We Were, which is the same year, is you know, shows a lot more range. But that's the thing he could do perfectly in this thing. That kind of relaxed, comic acting,
very
playing
natural.
Off of Paul Newman so beautifully. My deep dark secret that I'd put in my diary is I'm not a big Butch Cassidy fan. I like him a lot in the film, and I like Newman, but the movie just always seems kind of tonally uneven and. Like, you know, and his ideas were borrowed from other Westerns from the time.
I would agree with that. And I thought it was strange. Maybe we can pick up on this after the break, that all of a sudden raindrops keep falling on my head out of nowhere. I'm like, what? Because I rewatched that like a year or two ago. And I'm like, this is so strange. Like,
same here.
Jim Healy is here, folks. He's going to stick around and help me wrap things up here at Nightlight. We are coming right back after this very short break talking Robert Redford. And I'm going to ask Jim what he can recommend, what he's seen lately, too. That's all next on Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother.
Welcome back. I'm Pete Schwabba. This is Nightlight. It's been a fun show. Conrad, have you had fun tonight?
I definitely have.
That's all that I care about. our question of the night is, what was something, if you kept a diary, what in your diary would you be embarrassed if people read? John Murray from the 608 says, it would be packed with lies. I can't confess every day. And the rest is like 243 vacay pics on Facebook. I silently reflect on the day to the ceiling in bed. Good enough. All right, John. Thanks for not getting too personal. Let's see if we can squeeze one more in here. Steve from Florida says, speaking of diaries, fun fact, one of Conrad's favorite novel series was Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
That is true.
Your dad just outed you on national radio. It's statewide radio, national stream.
It's okay. It was a great series.
Yeah, it was. It was good. And then finally, we'll get the rest of your texts, folks. I know we're behind tonight on texts. We'll read them tomorrow night as well. Jack from Merrimack in the 414 says, if a single actor could carry a full-length film, it was Redford. See All Is Lost. If you haven't seen it, you need to put it on your list. Jack from Merrimack. Well, that's a great text for my guest, Jim Healy, who is here and knows a lot about movies in general, but certainly Robert Redford. I have not seen that.
All Is Lost is very good. Maybe that's probably his most important work as an actor after the 70s, I think.
Okay. And then The Hot Rock. I'm gonna add
that. Oh, you gotta see
list.
The Hot Rock.
I can't believe I haven't seen it. Sometimes I say I haven't seen a film and then I put it in. I'm like, I have seen this when I was younger and I just didn't know what it was. So what have you seen recently, Jim, at the theater?
I've been to see a bunch of things. I'll speak well of two movies. I really liked The Long Walk, and I loved Weapons. I thought it was really great.
Yeah.
Maybe the best new movie, at least studio American movie I've seen this year.
It was good. It was creepy.
Yeah, I really loved it. It's creepy and really compelling. And Zach Cregger's the writer director. He really knows how to, you know, make a story interesting. It's not it's not exactly linear. He gives you little pieces. And
yeah,
it's really well done. I like those two a lot. I was at the Toronto Film Festival and I saw a new Brazilian movie coming out directed by Kleber Mendonça Filho, which is, it's called The Secret Agent. It's set in Brazil during the 1970s, during their own kind of fascist era, kind of the same era as the film I'm Not Here was set in last year. But this is a really exciting movie made by a really passionate cinephile director, and it's about a fugitive who finds kind of community among other fugitives while also trying to save his hide from hitmen that are after him, and he spends a lot of his time hiding out in a movie theater where his father-in-law is the projectionist, and they're showing The Omen in 1977.
Oh, very cool.
And Jaws figures into the film, and it's a real kind of cinephile's delight, movie junkie's delight.
That's great. Did you see Barbarian? Is that correct?
I love Barbarian.
I did too.
Yeah, I liked it very much, and I was excited about Weapons, and that was what I think that was what was so great about it, is that it delivered on the promise of Barbarian. Which
that's interesting, because I thought if I had to rate the two, I know I'm in the minority. I think I like Barbarian better, just because it wasn't totally linear, but it was like it had more of an ending. Like the Weapons was kind of, I was slightly, if I'm nitpicking.
Yeah.
I love that all the kids left the house in the middle of the night, that crazy run. Yeah. It was so creepy.
Well, I found the climax of the Weapons really gratifying.
With the woman and the kids. Yeah, that was
very,
pretty,
very satisfying. I just felt the movie had more kind of an impact. It just felt more like a movie of the moment that was kind of speaking to, the culture in general and to, what's going on in the world right now. And, Barbarian's wonderful. I loved, every second. And I'd say Barbarian, maybe the story surprised me more than Weapons, but Weapons just was very satisfying.
I don't even know what, I don't even think I was doing this show when I saw Barbarian, and I've watched more horror since I've been doing this show, but Barbarian, I was so, the idea that there's this Airbnb and then this tunnel in a room they don't know about that goes down. And I mean, they're both really creepy, both really good movies. The Long Walk is Stephen King's first novel,
I guess, or maybe I don't know how long it is. Maybe it's like a novella. It's not too long, but he wrote it at 19 and it didn't get published until after he was established, I guess.
My son Joe, who saw that film and he thought it was maybe the best film. He liked it maybe better than anything he's seen.
Very good, very well acted and spare and unsettling in a lot of ways. I mean, it's just guys walking. That's really the whole walking and talking. That's the whole movie, but it's very cinematic and compelling.
There you go, folks. That's two movie recommendations from the great Jim Healy, a guy who watches more movies than any of us put together. What's your count at so far?
I'm on par. I'm usually, I will watch close to 700 features every year, but the numbers have changed. They used to be, these were new movies that I was seeing.
Right.
Now it's almost half and half with, rewatches.
Rewatching.
I'm doing because I've got this, Blu-ray collection that, sat unsealed on my shelves for years. And during COVID, I started getting into it. And now I really enjoy watching, 3 Days of the Condor again or The Hot Rock. So,
absolutely. Folks, check out the Wisconsin Film Festival. It is such a blast. They do a great job programming it. They offer outstanding films. It's not till April, but start marking your calendars. That's just a movie lover's heaven. And then check out UW Cinematheque too. Jim Healy, always a blast, sir. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks, Pete.
You got it. Tomorrow night on the show, we've got Dr. Kristen Lierley. You might know Dr. Kristen Lierley's name from the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show, which she hosts here on the Civic Media Radio Network and more specifically WGBW. And then Logan Rogge will be here from Travel Wisconsin talking about fun fall events throughout our state. That's tomorrow night. I'll be back on the home court in Green Bay. My thanks to Eric Jellin for being here. Jim Healy, thank you to all your texts and calls tonight, folks. We will finish up with the texts tomorrow and be back with more contest fun in the Civic Media Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest, which is happening through October 3rd. Every night, you have a chance to win. We will be back tomorrow night. On behalf of the lovable producer, Conrad, I'm Pete Schwab, saying good night, Wisconsin. Someone's living for their love. Someone's living for their love. And I love them.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.